Season's greetings. Welcome back to Bloody Bizarre.
My name's Emma.
I'm Sarah. The way you looked at me then was like you hated that.
I do. Yeah. You know that I've disliked the... It looks like you didn't...
I got like a piece that was not mixed properly.
Every time we record at my house, Emma's house, I have a beautiful coffee ready for Sarah. Sometimes I even make her like a cheese croissant that she really enjoys.
Very yummy.
So I rock up to Sarah's today. I have to let myself in. She's out the back painting. Patchy's barking his head off at me. Then I've got to set up the whole recording station. Sarah comes in and goes, do you want a coffee? I go, oh, no, it's all right. And she goes, I'll make it iced. And I go, okay, yeah. If you're having one, grab me one too. So she comes over and hands me this coffee. Lukewarm. One single ice block melting in it. That it's melted within like 5 minutes because it is, like I said, a warm coffee. And it also tastes like cigarettes.
What?
Yeah, it doesn't taste nice.
It shouldn't taste like cigarettes.
Well, you know, I've got like weird taste buds, but...
It's just like Blend 43. Oh, it's,
what?
It's not like...
What the fuck is... Oh, the coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, I don't have a coffee machine.
No, that's the other thing. I make her a beautiful espresso coffee when she comes to mine, and here I get fucking... Oh, it shouldn't taste disgusting. It's Blend 43. Unbelievable. Anyway, this is the last episode for the year.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you all for your loyal listening despite the issues that we've had this year.
Every year.
This year in particular, yeah. Though, with sound and drop date and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But look, to be fair, we do just do this for fun. So
You always try and...
Yeah, but I don't want people to think that we're getting paid for it when the quality is so shit.
Obviously not. Obviously not. In what world? But thank you for your loyalty and your listenership.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
We'll probably drop another episode in like maybe the middle of Jan or something like that.
We're going to do an update one.
Yeah, but we won't be back officially until Feb, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe get a few banked.
Yeah. And then we'll be back in your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else at the top?
Yeah, I just wanted to say there is somebody who tagged us in an Instagram story and I didn't get notified because it went to like the, you know, when it goes to the separate inbox where it's like, it's not the primary inbox.
You know, you mean like focused and not, you know, yeah. You can turn that off.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And I have now.
Okay.
But yeah, it went to that. And so when I got into the Instagram, it had already been 24 hours and the story had disappeared.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I don't know what it was. But if that person is listening, please know that I didn't just ignore it. I just don't know what it was.
Damn.
It could have been something bad. It could have been like, fuck this podcast.
Don't listen to it yet.
But it also might have been something nice. Like it was around Spotify Wrap time, so yeah. It could have been something like that. I don't know. But if you're listening, hang on, I'll find the name of the person. I just didn't want them to think that I had completely ignored them.
Well, you did, but you're giving a reason why.
Melissa. Yeah. So Melissa, all that came up for me is story unavailable. So, yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Melissa. Shout out to Melissa.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you still... Melissa.
And we remember the true crime cards again.
Okay, let's do them.
Look
first.
At us go. Okay. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. The Gulf of Guinea off the western coast of Africa is the world's hotspot for what criminal activity?
Pirating.
Yes. Well, piracy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure is. That was just like, well, obviously, what else is it going to be off the coast?
The options are offshore gambling, organ harvesting, or drug smuggling. Could have been any of those.
Yeah, I guess, but...
Organ harvesting would have been spicy.
You won't know this.
Okay.
What are the two murder methods Felix Yusupov claimed to have used to kill Grigory Rasputin, the infamous mad monk of Russia? I can give you one of them. So there's two methods. I can give you one of the methods.
Okay.
Poisoning.
Okay.
And?
Gun.
Yeah, shooting. Okay. Poisoning and shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to think, how did Rasputin die?
Okay, well, I'm going to get started.
Let's go for it. It's a good one.
This is what some podcasts refer to as a heavy hitter.
Okay.
This one is pretty gruesome.
Oh, God.
So heed that warning.
Okay.
But I do doubt that anyone who's interested in true crime hasn't heard of this one.
Okay.
Nonetheless, if you're squeamish, proceed with caution. Today we're delving into the life and crimes of an American murderer, suspected serial killer, body snatcher, potential cannibal. This man, hint.
I mean, they all are.
Okay. Not Eileen Wuornos.
Every time it's like, what about Eileen Wuornos? Yeah.
What about that one woman that went mad? No, she wasn't. Okay, anyway. He hailed from Plainfield, Wisconsin, where he also committed his crimes. Gathering notoriety and disgust around the late 50s, this man has been used for inspiration.
I think I can guess who it is. Can I guess?
Wait. For a number of horror characters. Do you want to... Just whisper off mic. Okay. Yeah.
Ha-ha.
Number of characters. Among many, he served as the inspiration for Norman Bates from Psycho, Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. That's right. The last episode of the year, I'm closing out with Edward Theodore Gein, or Ed Gein, as he's most commonly known.
And this was a listener request.
Yes. Can you tell me who requested it?
Uh-huh. I'll find it.
I've never actually known the correct way to pronounce his surname.
Like Gein or Gein.
Or Gein. I heard someone say Gein. In fact, the podcast My Favourite Murder said that it was actually correctly pronounced Gein, but I think it's correctly pronounced Gein. So I looked at a few different sources for the pronunciation, and all of them said Gein, except for Karen Kilgariff.
Right, okay.
In one newspaper from the time, so 1958, they referred to Gein as an admitted slayer and ghoul. That was in the newspaper.
Slayer.
But ghoul.
Deb. Listener Deb requested this one.
So this is a request of listener Deb. So if you're listening, Deb, please be kind. I hope I do it justice for you.
Yeah, I feel like Deb might be a Perth gal. No, not sure. Anyway, okay. Doesn't matter. Thanks for listening, Deb, and thanks for the suggestion.
Yes, thank you. So, yeah, despite this being like a massive, well-known killer and case, I did encounter quite a bit of conflicting information.
Okay.
So there are a few facts where I've kind of mentioned, okay, well, I read in one place this, but I also read another place that this was the case.
Right.
Essentially, it doesn't really change the core story, but you know, I know mm-hmm. when I'm listening to podcasts and I know that they've said a fact that is not a fact, is a falsehood, I'm like, come on, it would have taken 5 minutes of research to figure that that was not true.
I have probably done that.
Yeah. Probably. But yeah, I've done my best.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go through my sources. I've got Wikipedia, obviously, newspapers.com. I went through some newspapers from the time. Are they called contemporaneous newspapers when they're from mm-hmm. the time of the...
That's a nice word.
Yeah. Isthmus.com article by Scott Hassett. Allitsinteresting.com article by Kalina Fraga. And podcast episode 181 of My Favorite Murder titled Live at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee. Okay. Before he was known as the Butcher of Plainfield, Gein was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin on August 27, 1906. He was the second of two sons to George Philip Gein and Augusta Wilhelmine Gein. The couple's older son was named Henry. Augusta, who was very, very religious, specifically Lutheran, preached to her sons about the innate immorality of the world, the evil of drinking, and her belief that all women were naturally promiscuous and instruments of the devil.
She thought that?
Yeah.
Did she think that she was an exception?
You know, who knows what these people are like?
God damn. Such like self-hatred.
Yeah, well, that's always the way, isn't it? Like, anyway, but get this. Apparently, according to the census records, Augusta fell pregnant with Henry before she was married to George.
Well, that's because she's promiscuous and a tool of the devil.
Well, I think that it was George's kid, but it was out of wedlock.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, what a slut.
Just in case it hasn't come across, that was sarcasm.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love her to meet me. Oh my God, she would fucking die. I might actually be an instrument of the devil. She reserved time every... This is Augusta. She reserved time every afternoon to read to her boys from the Bible, usually selecting verses from the Old Testament and the Book of Revelation. She favoured the stories about death, murder, and divine retribution.
She's just like an old-timey true crime girl.
Yeah, I guess. She's like... Get this.
Yeah.
Would you believe?
Have listened to this one.
Yeah. Gein idolized and became obsessed with his mother. In contrast, George, Ed's father, was an alcoholic who had I guess that's why Augusta hated drinking, or like spoke about the evils of drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was like, don't you dare become like George.
So hypocritical, like already. So much hypocrisy all around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Ed's father was an alcoholic. He had trouble holding down jobs and was truly hated by Augusta, but divorce was not an option for them.
Mm-hmm.
He spent time working as a carpenter, a tanner, an insurance salesman, and even owned a local grocery store, which sounds pretty impressive on paper.
Yeah, I guess like in the olden days, it was just like you could,
pick one up for just 2p.
Just try stuff.
Yeah. He would eventually sell this shop, and the family moved from the city to a farm in Plainfield, Wisconsin. This farm was a massive 155 acres, and the family lived in isolation. The house never had electricity.
But like even shit like that, obviously they didn't have a heap of money, and they're just like, let's just go and live on this enormous parcel of land. Yeah. No worries, we'll just buy it.
Yeah, I know. Oh, it'll set you back a good $5. No, it's you might have maybe I will try out some accents this episode, because the Wisconsin accent I find very alluring.
Okay.
Oh yeah, well, you know.
Is that Wisconsin?
Yeah. Well, she was all in the house by herself, and it was gonna be quite snowy that year, so.
Is Wisconsin north?
Yeah.
Right.
Right on the border.
Yeah, okay. So it's like a little bit Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Augusta would not let any outsiders come into the farm. She turned people away. Ed Gein would only leave the family farm to attend school with his brother, and would spend most of his free time doing chores around the place, as well as his brother. I think it's pretty surprising that Augusta even let her kids attend school.
Yeah.
Given this kind of...
like distrust of... the outside world.
Yeah, and like insane religiosity. Like you'd think that that would be a homeschooling situation.
Maybe they found a really religious school.
Maybe. So Gein was apparently shy. Classmates and teachers remembered him as having strange mannerisms, like random laughter, as if he were laughing at his own personal jokes in his head.
Who would do such a thing?
Augusta punished Gein whenever he tried to make friends. According to family acquaintances, both of the boys were discouraged from making friends.
Why?
So there was no outside influence.
Oh, God. It's Augusta. She's a real piece of work.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. Despite his poor social development, Gein did fairly well in school, particularly in reading. On April 1st, 1940, Gein's father died of heart failure at age 66. Ed Gein was 34 at this time. Gein and his brother Henry began doing odd jobs around town to help cover living expenses. The brothers were generally considered reliable and honest by the rest of the community. While both worked as handymen, Ed Gein also frequently babysat for neighbours. Imagine.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. My babysitter was Ed Gein growing up.
Right?
Yeah. He enjoyed babysitting because he related more easily to children than adults. Henry,
I wonder if this guy was on the spectrum.
So we're going to learn that he is diagnosed with a mental illness.
Yeah.
Eventually. But I think probably, on the spectrum as well. I
mean, like in modern times, he would probably,
Mm-hmm. I mean.
Who among us, hey?
Henry began dating, Henry the brother, he began dating a divorced mother of two. I'm sure Augusta did not approve.
Oh, God, no.
Divorce?
Ugh. Harlot. Disgusting.
You stand by your man. And he planned to move in with her, but he worried about his brother's attachment to their mother. So Henry was worried about Ed.
Right.
Often Henry would speak ill of their mother or criticize her around Gein, who responded with shock and hurt. On May 16th, 1944, the Geins were burning away marshland on the property. The fire got out of control and the local fire department had to be called and get involved. By the end of the day, the fire had been extinguished and the firefighters had gone. And it was then that Gein said that Henry was missing. With lanterns and flashlights, a search party went out looking for 43-year-old Henry, whose dead body was found lying face down. Apparently, Henry had been dead for some time, and it appeared that the cause of death was heart failure, since he'd not been burned or injured otherwise, that they could tell in 1944. I also heard that rather than the search party finding Henry, Ed actually led them straight to Henry's body, which was in a place, in a patch of scorched earth, but Henry was not burned at all.
Weird.
It was later reported by biographer Harold Schechter, or Schechter, or whatever else, that Henry had bruises on his head as well. Police dismissed the possibility of foul play, and the county coroner later officially listed asphyxiation as the cause of death, which, look, is possible given that he wasn't burned or anything. He could have just, you know, from smoke inhalation.
Right, like if he was unconscious and the fire started.
Yeah, but I guess he'd have to be unconscious first.
Yes. Sus.
But also, wouldn't it list as smoke inhalation, not asphyxiation? But then I guess
who knows how they did things in the 40s. Well, yeah. But
either way.
Strange.
Yep. The authorities accepted the accident theory, but no official investigation was conducted and an autopsy was not performed. We're going to touch on this death a little bit later on, so just keep it in mind.
Yeah.
Apparently, at Henry's funeral, Ed was heard saying odd things like, quote, Henry would have been a great disappointment if he had lived. If I die, I don't want anyone hearing that at my funeral from your lips.
I'm going to put it in the eulogy.
Imagine a little Easter egg for any listeners that are in attendance.
Yeah, I'll give them a little wink while
while you're hamming it up there. Yeah. Okay, so now with the father George and brother Henry deceased, Ed and Augusta were now alone. Augusta had a paralyzing stroke shortly after Henry's death, and Ed then devoted himself to taking care of her.
Betty loved that.
Yeah.
All to myself.
Sicko. Oh, I've got mother all of myself now.
Ugh.
So here's a story that Ed recounted. Sometime in 1945, he and his mother visited a man named Smith. I kind of like that name as a first name.
Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very popular to use last names as first names.
So Smith lived nearby, and Ed and his mother visited to buy some straw. According to Ed, Augusta witnessed Smith beating a dog. A woman inside the Smith residence came outside and yelled at him to stop, but Smith ultimately beat the dog to death. Augusta was really upset, right? The mum. She was really upset by this scene. But what bothered her wasn't the brutality toward the dog. Rather, it was the presence of the woman. Augusta told Ed that the woman was not married to Smith and so had no business being there, and angrily called her, quote, Smith's harlot. That was the issue. That was her issue. It wasn't this brutality.
She didn't care about the dog being beaten to death.
No. It was this Smith's harlot.
And the harlot in question was the one being like, hey, stop beating the dog.
Yeah. Again, I'd love to speak to Augusta now and tell her about my lifestyle. The men.
The rotation.
The scores. Speaking of killing her. Sorry.
Were you?
Speaking of Augusta.
Yeah.
She had a second stroke soon after.
Good.
And her health deteriorated rapidly. Unfortunately, Augusta died on December 29th, 1945, at the age of 67.
Good riddance.
Good riddance to bad rubbish. 67, not that old, but
no.
I guess when you lead a life of hate,
yeah,
you'll rot from the inside. Mm-hmm. Also, one of my best friends is born on December 29th. Ed was devastated by her death. Schechter, the biographer, said he had, quote, lost his only friend and one true love, and he was absolutely alone in this world.
One true love.
Yeah. Gein held onto the farm and earned money from odd jobs around town, as he'd done in the past. He boarded up rooms once used by his mother, including the upstairs, the downstairs parlour and living room, and those were left untouched. They were apparently, like, when the police eventually did get into the house, spoiler, they found them, like, with, like, a layer of dust on them because no one ever used them.
Yeah, yep.
While the rest of the rooms in the house became increasingly squalid and gross, these mother rooms remained pristine. Gein lived in a small room next to the kitchen. Around this time, he became interested in reading pulp magazines and adventure stories, particularly those involving cannibals or Nazi atrocities. Specifically concerning Ilse Koch, Kosch was a German war criminal who committed atrocities while her husband Karl Otto Kosch was commandant at Buchenwald. Or is it Buchenwald? No, it's Buchenwald, isn't it? The concentration camp? Buchenwald? Okay.
I don't think it's the last one.
Though Ilse Kosch had no official position in the Nazi state, she became one of the most infamous Nazi figures at war's end because of how egregious her alleged actions were, including that she'd selected tattooed prisoners for death in order to fashion lampshades and other items from their skins. Her 1947 US military commission court trial at Dachau received worldwide media attention, as did the testimony of survivors who ascribed sadistic and perverse acts of violence to Kosch. So he was particularly interested in her and her vibe. Gein received a farm subsidy from the federal government starting in 1951, which meant he didn't have to work as often. He occasionally worked for the local municipal road crew and crop threshing crews in the Plainfield area. Sometime between 1946 and 1956, he also sold an 80-acre or 32-hectare parcel of land that Henry had owned. So up until this point, Ed Gein is a law-abiding citizen, if not a little odd, to the authorities. That's what they believe. This would soon change. On the morning of November 16, 1957... 58-year-old hardware store owner Bernice Warden went missing. I read in one place that ordinarily her husband John would also be at the store, but he was out for hunting season. But a newspaper from the time described her as a widow. So I don't think she had a husband.
Right.
Who knows? The hardware store's truck was seen driving out from the back of the store at about 9:30 a.m. Who found Bernice missing was also a point of confusion. Someone said that John returned to the store to find her gone. Other places say that Warden's son, local fire chief Frank Warden, went to the store about 5 p.m. that day and found the cash register open, blood on the floor, and no sign of his mother. I read on Wikipedia that few customers were at the store at the time because of deer hunting season, but I also read that the door was locked. So, look, I'm not sure about this whole situation, who found her, what state the store was in. But I'm guessing that that's how the alarm wasn't raised earlier, that it was either the door was locked and there weren't many people anyway coming through.
Yeah.
Or, whatever. Also, the son, Frank, he was also listed in some places as the deputy sheriff. So he's either the deputy sheriff or the fire chief.
Maybe he was both.
Maybe in like a small town like that, they do operate both. I'm not sure. Anyway. Again, it's like it's not super important to the story, but but he, I think, found her because I've read that in more places than the husband stuff. Anyway, the circumstances of her disappearance matched those of an unsolved disappearance from 3 years earlier. 51-year-old Mary Hogan had vanished while tending her bar in a nearby rural tavern that she owned. There was an empty shell casing and a blood trail to the door. Apparently, during the time, Ed overhears some locals talking about Mary's disappearance, and he jokes, oh, she's not missing. She's at my farmhouse right now. Oh, she's not missing. She's at my farmhouse right now.
And they were like,
great
joke, Ed.
That's
so funny.
That's kind of, Why did he say that? And then they're like, it's just weirdo. Investigators were told that on the evening before, so November 15th, Ed Gein had been in the store, the hardware store. So sorry, away from Mary Hogan, now back to Bernice Warden.
Yeah.
So the night before she went missing, Mrs. Warden, Ed had been in the grocery store, the hardware store, fucking hell. And he was expected to return the next morning to get some antifreeze. And in fact, a sales slip for the antifreeze was the last receipt written by Bernice Warden on the morning that she disappeared.
So he did return, probably. Did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gein, on a recent visit, had jokingly asked Bernice Warden if she wanted to go roller skating.
Again, weird joke.
Yeah.
It's like one of those people who will write something like, hey, want to hang out? And put lol at the end to make it like...
Mm. And you're like, do you want to?
Yeah, like... Yeah.
Working on this information, Gein obviously became a suspect. Gein wasn't home when two deputies arrived at his farm, 5 miles from the town. They left after a superficial search. They found Gein later that evening, though. I read two versions of this section as well. One said he was tracked to a West Plainfield grocery store. Another said he was having dinner at the house of the grocery store owner. Again, not super important, but, Regardless, he was taken in questioning while the Washara County Sheriff's Department returned and searched the Gaines farm more thoroughly. It was after dark, and obviously Gaines' house had no power, so they entered the kitchen and shone their flashlights around. What they found at the Gaines farm was truly the stuff of nightmares, and as I said at the beginning, it's been the basis of a number of horror stories. So, let's get into it.
And sorry, I might have missed this. How old was Gaines when he supposedly started?
I think like late 30s.
Right.
Mid to late 30s.
It's just so old to for that to be.
Yeah, but he did have his mum as well prior.
Yeah.
So first of all, they find the missing Bernice Warden. Her decapitated body was in a shed on Gaines' property, hung upside down by her legs with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrists. The torso was, quote, dressed out like a deer. Her head was in a pan in the kitchen. One of the deputies ran outside and threw up, understandably. Mm-hmm. She'd been shot with a .22 caliber rifle and the mutilations were made after her death.
Yeah.
Gaines had entered the hardware store and had taken a rifle from the back of the store up to the counter. Presumably, Warden thought he was about to purchase the rifle, but instead he loaded a bullet into it and shot her.
Right there in the store?
Yep.
Jesus.
During interrogation.
So the store, there should have been like a heap of blood at the store then.
Yeah, I think .22 caliber rifle bullets are quite small.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's more sort of like internally damaging.
Yeah, I'm not. Look, there was blood in the store, but I'm not sure. And look, that .22 caliber comment could be completely wrong. Mm-hmm. I am thinking of a .22 caliber handgun, which is smaller than like a Glock, but.
Yeah.
I think. Fuck. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, probably people do know.
Yeah.
During interrogation, Gaines also admitted to the murder of Mary Hogan. Apparently, Gaines had heard her talking and she had a foul mouth and therefore didn't deserve to live, I guess. Gaines had shot her to death and then again utilized her corpse in various ways.
How about fuck you, Gaines? Yeah. How about that?
What are you going to do? Your mum's a fucking bitch.
Fuck you. Fuck your mum.
Yeah.
Fuck your dad. Your brother Henry seemed okay.
Okay, yeah, that we know of. Yeah, fucking haunt me. I dare you. I fucking dare you. Questioning Gaines about the death of Bernice Warden in 1957, state investigator Joe Wilimowski brought up questions about Henry's death. George Arndt, who studied the case, wrote that in retrospect, it was possible and likely that Henry's death was, quote, the Cain and Abel aspect of this case. Now, I don't want to expose my ignorance yet again on this podcast, but I didn't really know the Cain and Abel reference, so I did a little bit of research into that as well. So for anyone that's in the same boat as me, surprise, surprise, it's a religious story.
Yeah.
That explains why I didn't know it. Cain and Abel are biblical figures from the book of Genesis who are the first two sons of Adam and Eve. Cain is the firstborn son of Adam and Eve. He was a farmer who offered crops to God as a sacrifice. Abel, the second son of Adam and Eve, was a shepherd who offered his firstborn flock to God as a sacrifice. In the tale, God favored Abel's offering over Cain's, which enraged Cain. Cain killed Abel out of jealousy. So basically a brotherly murder.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's return to Gaines' farm, where county sheriffs were searching the house and the property by a flashlight.
Yep. So they've found the two women.
No, they've found Bernice Warden.
Oh, and it's so just, they haven't. He just admitted to.
Yeah. Okay. Later on, when during questioning, he admitted to Mary Hogan. So here's a list of just some of the things they found. Right. You ready?
Yeah.
Whole human bones and fragments. A waste basket made of human skin. Human skin covering several chairs with residual fat still clinging to the undersides.
Oh my God, that house would have stunk.
Yep. Skulls on bedposts. Female skulls with some of the tops sawn off. Bowls made from human skulls. A corset made from a female torso skinned from the shoulders to waist with straps so it could be worn like a vest.
What possible use would he even have for that?
I'm going to tell you. Leggings made from human skin. Masks made from the skin of human heads. Mary Hogan's face mask in a paper bag. Mary Hogan's skull in a box. Bernice Warden's entire head in a burlap sack. Sorry, I said earlier that it was in the pot.
It was on the stove.
Okay, there's another contradiction.
Okay.
Bernice Warden's heart in a plastic bag in front of Gaines' potbelly stove. Here's a gross one. 9 vulvae in a shoebox.
What? Like vaginas?
Yeah. Well, the vagina's the inside part.
Ugh.
A young girl's dress and the vulvas of 2 females judged to have been about 15 years old. Just loose, I guess. A belt made from female human nipples. 4 noses. A pair of lips on a window shade drawstring.
Did he just have this, like, just all around his house?
Strewn.
Oh, my God.
A lampshade made from the skin of a human face and a number of fingernails from human female fingers.
How on earth did he kill that many people?
He didn't. I'm going to get to it.
Oh.
These artifacts were photographed at the state crime laboratory and then, quote, decently disposed of. So these items don't exist anymore. There will be photos somewhere. I've seen a photo of Bernice Warden's body. I wouldn't recommend searching for it. Geen's property was cordoned off as a growing crowd of journalists and onlookers gathered outside. Sheriff Schley inflamed their curiosity with his only public comment. Other than that Warden's body had been found, he said it was, quote, just too horrible, horrible beyond belief.
Yeah, that poor guy's probably in absolute shock.
Yeah, yeah.
Traumatised.
Absolutely. When questioned, Geen told investigators that between 1947 and 1952, he had made as many as 40 nighttime visits to 3 local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies while he was in a, quote, daze-like state. So that's how he has so many bodies without having murdered them.
Yes. I was going to say the amount of people it would take to make like a whole belt of nipples.
On about 30 of those visits, he said that he came out of the days while in the cemetery and left the grave in good order, quote, and returned home empty-handed. On the other occasions, he dug up the graves of recently buried middle-aged women that he thought resembled his mother and took the bodies home where he tanned their skins to make his paraphernalia. Geen admitted to stealing from 9 graves and took investigators to their locations. The state crime lab largely corroborated Geen's confessions. Soon after his mother's death, Geen began to create, quote, a woman suit so that he could, quote, become his mother to literally crawl inside her skin.
Oh, my God. Oh. Is just so creepy.
Yeah, truly disgusted.
Oh.
Here's something better. He denied having sex with the bodies that he exhumed because, quote, they smelled too bad.
I'm surprised you could tell.
I'm also surprised that it's like, well, not surprised, but it's like, that's not the reason that you say. You say, fuck, no, of course not. That's disgusting. Yes. You don't say, well, I would have if they smelled good.
And also, why did he keep the vagina, like
the vulvae?
The vulva? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did he have them in a box?
To look at. A psychiatric report noted, quote, a very marked sexual preoccupation throughout most of his answers to questions, though.
Okay. Yeah. So there was something there.
There's something going on there. Yeah. Did he, I think, yeah, look, the Freudians would have a field day with.
Yeah. Gain. Yeah. I mean, the crawling inside mother's skin, that's.
I want to be inside mother, you know? And while Geen also denied cannibalism, he's known to have given various people, quote, venison, although he would later say that he never hunted deer.
Oh, no. Again, imagine, like.
Oh, yeah, my babysitter growing up was Ed Geen, and he cooked for us a few times and gave us venison.
Yeah, that's actually a really good accent.
Thank you. I'm getting better as I'm warming up. While only officially been linked to the murders of Bernice Warden and Mary Hogan, he was a suspect in a few more unsolved cases around Wisconsin. When questioned, lie detector tests corroborated Geen's denial of involvement, but we all know that lie detector tests don't mean much, really.
Yeah.
Psychiatrists working with Geen did, however, say that it's unlikely that Geen directed violence at anyone other than those who resembled his mother. But I'm going to tell you about those unsolved cases that could be linked to him.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Jean Weckler, 8, disappeared near her farm home in Fort Atkinson at approximately 3:30 p.m. on May 1, 1947. She was given a lift home from school in Jefferson by a neighbor who dropped her at the Weckler farm. Weckler was last seen pausing to open the family mailbox and removing a stack of mail. She was never seen again. Witnesses reported seeing a dark color possibly black 1936 Ford sedan with a grey plastic spotlight in the vicinity that afternoon, and Gein owned such a car. Evelyn Grace Hartley, 15, went missing while babysitting a 20-month-old girl at the home of La Crosse State College professor Viggo Rasmussen. That evening, her father, Richard, called the Rasmussen house several times after she failed to check in as planned. He received no answer, so he drove to the house to find the doors were locked, the lights and radio on, and items scattered around the house.
Where was the baby?
I guess in the house. The living room furniture had been moved around, as were Evelyn's school books. Richard found her shoes in different rooms, one upstairs, one downstairs. He also found his daughter's broken glasses upstairs. Richard didn't find Evelyn in the house. After his arrest, Gein was questioned regarding Evelyn's disappearance. However, he denied involvement. I think it's just the proximity is the reason that he's related to this one. Victor Harold Travis, 42, a male, resident of Adams County, went off to deer hunt in the company of an acquaintance, Raymond Burgess, in 1952. In the late afternoon, the pair stopped for refreshments at Mac's Bar in Plainfield. At around 7 p.m., they both left the bar and drove away. The hunters, along with the car Burgess was driving, were never seen again, and no trace of them was ever found. Travis and Burgess had been...
Burgess, sorry. I don't know. I just know somebody with a surname Burgess.
Oh, yeah. What am I saying?
Burgess.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe it is Burgess.
But. I doubt it. I highly doubt it. They'd been seen hunting on the farm next to Gein's despite his objections.
Oh, okay. So he was like, fuck off. And
Hey, don't you go hunting around. No, that was British. Hey, you're not allowed to hunt on my farm.
He probably didn't want them there because... He didn't want them to find his fucking skin suits and
didn't want him
noses.
To see, and wearing his mother's leggings.
Labias lying around.
Yeah. Gein had also tentatively been linked to the disappearance of neighbour James Walsh. Walsh and his wife lived near Gein. He performed chores for her and her husband, and then her husband went missing. Gein was also investigated for a potential involvement in the August 1956 disappearance of Irene Keating, who was last seen in Plainfield, and in the attempted abduction of Judy Rodenkall from Auroraville.
Yeah, it is a bit weird for like a small town to have this many disappearances and stuff within the time period that he was active.
Yeah. During questioning, Sheriff Art Schley reportedly assaulted Gein by banging his head and face into a brick wall.
Good on him.
Yeah. As a result, Gein's initial confession was ruled inadmissible, obviously. Schley actually died of heart failure in 1968 at age 43 before Gein's trial.
Mm.
Many who knew Schley said that he was just traumatized by the horror of Gein's crimes.
Yeah.
And they reckon that caused his death.
Yeah.
Gein was officially arraigned on one count of first-degree murder in Washoe County Court for the murder of Mrs. Warden. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity and was sent for an assessment. It was determined that Gein had schizophrenia and was found not competent to stand trial. He was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, now known as Dodge Correctional Institution, and that's a maximum security facility in Walpen. He was later transferred to the Mendota State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. Gein told Dr. Schubert, an examining psychiatrist at Central State, that after his mother's death, he felt he could arouse the dead through an act of willpower and was disappointed when he failed with both his mother and some of the bodies he exhumed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the use of the word arouse in that situation.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
Given the context.
Given what we suspect. Yeah. Another examining psychiatrist, Dr. Warmington, perceived hostility and sexual repression in Gein's unusual attachment to his mother.
What? Sexual repression? You don't say.
All women are all whores, you reckon. Those feelings were kept in check when she was alive, but after her death, Gein acted on, quote, a desire for a substitute for his mother in the form of a replica or a body that could be kept indefinitely.
That's giving Tansler.
Carl Tansler,
it's
yeah.
It's giving Tansler vibes.
11 years later, in 1968, doctors determined Gein was, quote, mentally able to confer with counsel and participate in his defense. So therefore, the trial began. It started in 1968 and lasted a week. A psychiatrist testified that Gein had told him that he did not know whether the killing of Warden was intentional or accidental. Gein had told him that while he examined a gun in Warden's store, the weapon discharged and killed Warden. I call bullshit on that, but anyway. He said he had not aimed the rifle at Warden and did not remember anything else that happened that morning.
Typical. It's always, I don't remember. Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember.
Oh, I can't recall that. At the request of the defense, Gaines' trial was held without a jury, so bench only. Judge Robert H. Golmar presiding. Gaines was found guilty by Golmar on November 14. A second trial was set to deal with Gaines' sanity. After testimony by doctors from the prosecution and the defense, Golmar ruled that Gaines was not guilty by reason of insanity, and he was ordered committed to Central State Hospital for the criminally insane. So mm-hmm. he went back from whence he came.
Yeah.
Gaines spent the rest of his life in a mental hospital.
Yeah.
Judge Golmar wrote, quote, due to prohibitive costs, Gaines was tried for only one murder, that of Mrs. Warden. He also admitted to killing Mary Hogan. So he put that on the record. Gaines' house, the outbuildings, and his 195-acre property were appraised at $4,700 at the time, which is equivalent to $50,000 in 2023.
That's so cheap.
I know. Oh, Patchy's pressed the button again. His possessions were scheduled to be auctioned on March 30, 1958, but amidst rumours that the house and the land it stood on might become a tourist attraction, early on the morning of March 20, the house was destroyed by a fire.
On purpose?
They reckon so. So a deputy fire marshal reported that a garbage fire had been set about 23 metres from the house by a cleaning crew who was given the task of disposing refuse. But that fire wasn't the one that spread along the ground to the location of the house. Arson was suspected, but the cause of the fire was never officially determined. It's possible that the fire was not considered a matter of urgency to Fire Chief Frank Warden, son of Gaines' victim, Bernice Warden.
Yeah.
Or, you know, local police chief, I'm not sure what to call him. When Gaines learned of the incident while in detention, he shrugged and said, just as well. Gaines' Ford sedan, which he used to haul the bodies of his victims, was sold at public auction for $760. That's the equivalent of $8,000 in 2023. It was sold to a carnival sideshow operator, Bunny Gibbons. Gibbons charged carnival goers 25 cents admission to see it.
Oh my God.
Gaines died at the Mendota Mental Health Institute due to respiratory failure secondary to lung cancer on July 26, 1984, at the age of 77. Over the years, souvenir seekers chipped away pieces from his gravestone until the stone itself was stolen in 2000. It was recovered in June 2001 near Seattle, Washington, and was placed in storage at the Washoe County Sheriff's Department. Gaines is interred between his parents and brother in Plainfield Cemetery. His gravesite is now unmarked, but it's not unknown, and people do visit it under the banner of dark tourism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's with his mum?
Next to his mum and his brother. And then his dad's on the outside.
I should have just chucked him on top of the mum. He would have loved that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And who the fuck cares what she wants?
Yeah.
No, let's not do that, because that would, you know,
that's
what
he
wants.
Him. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Put him ages away from his mum.
As I said up top, Gaines has been the inspiration for many movies, TV shows, songs, documentaries, and even plays. Most recently in 2024, so earlier this year, it was announced that Charlie Hunnam will portray Gaines in the third season of Monster, where Gaines will be the primary focus of the season.
Is Monster, like, is every season a
different killer?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So yep. Wasn't it, the first one was Dharma? The first one was Dharma, then it was the Menendez brothers, and next it's
I
haven't watched any of them, but
if it's the same Dharma one that I watch, is that the one with that
kid? That guy? Evan?
Yeah, the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so.
I did watch that series. Yeah, it was a good series. So yeah, really, really well done.
And if you look at a side-by-side of Ed Gein and Charlie Hunnam, pretty spot on. So yeah, that's the case of Ed Gein. Disgusting.
Good
man.
God, yeah. Far out. The thought of just having noses lying around, lips on your windowsill. Yeah, like, just the fuck.
Yeah.
The chairs with, oh my God. Anyway, disgusting. We don't need to go over it. Gross. I guess thank you for sharing that. I knew about Ed Gein, obviously.
Yeah, of course,
but
yeah.
I guess it's, you know, you don't know it in depth.
No. And it's also like, yeah, obviously it's inspired movies and stuff, because you can't come up with something that depraved.
Yeah, yeah. I know, sometimes you think of like horror movies and you're like, how did they even think of this? And 9 times out of 10, it's like,
they didn't.
It was, somebody has done that.
It's like Law and Order SVU. It's always ripped from the headlines.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I used to get freaked out watching Saw sometimes, that people would get ideas from it.
Yeah.
But you know what? People are so fucked up. Like, they don't need it.
No, they think of worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Merry Christmas. you'll hear from us in the new year. But until then, stay safe. Stay cool if you're in Australia, because fuck this fucking heat. It's going to be 38 here today and I'm sick of it.
I don't mind it if it's 35 or under. Once it starts getting over 35,
it's a bit much. Calm down.
It's a bit much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you in the new year.
Bye.
Bye.